Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of Early Work with me, Rhys James. Joining me today on Early Work is Matthew Horn. You'll know Matthew Horn from playing Gavin in Gavin and Stacey, but also all sorts of stuff. He's in Dad's Army, does loads of stuff with Catherine Tate. He's a very funny, comedic actor. Now, I was a big fan of his when I was the age that I am in a lot of these poems. So it was great to meet someone from that era of my life and interview them all about what they were like when they were that age. Although he wrote a lot of stuff when he was a lot younger than I am in these poems. He wrote loads of stuff when he was like 9 or 10 years old. Loads of really inventive, dark stuff. He won poetry competitions at school and stuff like that. It's incredible. It's a really fun episode. He had some amazing early work, so I hope you enjoy it. Joining me today in the Early Work creche is Matthew Horn. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
If you don't know, listeners, Matthew Horn is probably best known for when I, at 16, drew up a database of all the beers of the world to do what his character Gavin does in Gavin and Stacey. In one scene, it's referenced. Do you remember that scene?
I do, yeah. 13 years ago.
Yeah. That's what you're best known for.
How old were you then?
Rhys, when he tried to do Beers of the World with his friend.
Well, I think actually that's where James and Ruth got the idea from.
Yeah. They would have known that 16-year-old me was also planning the same thing.
Actually, 13 years ago, you were probably younger than 16, weren't you?
I was 15. So actually, it was after it came out. I was a bit late, maybe, to the Gavin and Stacey party. Oh, no. What a way to reveal that. Also, maybe quite well known for when I spent ages searching on various used car websites to find a blue Citroen Saxo.
Did you really?
Yeah, I loved that car in the show. So
I'm
gonna get a car like that.
Very heavy clutch.
Really? Did you have to actually drive it quite a lot?
Yeah.
Did you have to actually drive it to Barry all the time?
A lot of the scenes were shot on the M4, not on what's known in the film industry as a low loader, which is basically a lorry that carries a car. I actually had to drive and act at the same time, which is very difficult.
Wow. And you were driving.
But more importantly, you actually wanted to buy that car.
Yeah, but the end of the story is I never took a driving lesson and I don't have a driving license. So this is before I was like, I'm 17, I'm going to learn to drive immediately and I'm going to get a blue Citroen Saxo. And then in the end, I decided I'll do absolutely zero of those things.
Okay.
So now I don't drive. But if I did, I'll tell you what I'd be driving. A Prius. We've got to save the world. That's crucial.
Yeah, but they are a death trap.
Why?
Because the silence. Yeah.
Where is the Saxo? Is that allowed?
It's very noisy.
Is it?
I mean, a heavy clutch is a noisy clutch.
That's hard.
And I know you're not a driver, but...
And I'm not a philosopher either, but it's nice to it's nice to hear something so deep so early into the podcast.
You're welcome.
Matthew, if I had to guess what you were like at school, and I do, because it's the first format point of the show.
Yeah.
What I've written is good at football, Now, that I know for a fact because I've seen you score on Soccer AM before. Yeah,
it's quite a moment.
Very proud reaction. But that actually bleeds into explanation for what else I think you were like. So it says, good at football, so therefore you were in with a football laddie crowd, which meant you were slightly naughty by association, messing about in lessons to keep your mates happy, but secretly you wanted to get on with your work, I reckon. Best example would be, I reckon, in drama, I can imagine you being mates with the sort of lads who just took drama so they could hit each other with sticks and throw props around, but you wanted to act. Am I correct?
I would say that's 95% accurate.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Although there weren't those types in the drama group, the drama lot.
Oh, it was thespians only, was it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we're talking about a different era. We're going back a bit.
Right.
The football lads wouldn't have even seen that as an opportunity to not do anything.
Oh, they hadn't wised up.
So it was just thesps. But I was very good at football. And I did used to mess around in class, but I was quite studious and more academic than most people would think.
Really? Why do you think...
Until after this podcast.
Yeah, the truth will out.
Erudite and
why
eloquent
do you think
I am.
People would think you weren't academic.
I don't know. I think a lot of people think that actors are just stupid.
Sure. Well, thanks for coming on. what were your best subjects then? What were you good at school?
Drama.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And I loved geography as well.
Oh, really?
I loved, physical and human geography, as it was known then.
I don't know.
I'm
what
talking
that
to you is. As if I lived in 1840.
But you're right, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, so physical geography is obviously rivers and mountains and glaciation and the physical landscape.
Big fan of you really doubling down on this. I'm academic with a word like glaciation immediately, straight off the bat.
Human geography is more sort of socio-political and socio-economic.
Oh, this is lovely
stuff. There's some jaws just dropped.
Lovely stuff. I mean, if you're not subscribing already, you better be now. This is turned. Normally, this podcast is just full of thick idiots. But
is it really?
We've got an academic in the house.
No, I've seen the other guests. You've done very well. And you've done very well being on tour and writing all of that stuff that you just wrote.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
But, I mean, that's the thing about millennials, though, aren't they? They're very, very fastidious.
Oh, mate. All these words. You're going to have to start translating some of these. I don't know what you're fucking talking about. Human geography. God, geography of the mind.
Well,
did you do well?
It's
did you get
about,
good results?
Well, actually, interestingly, one thing I remember from human geography was the AIDS crisis.
And the reason you're bringing that up is because
we currently have a virus crisis.
But but without the context of the chat we were having pre-show.
By the time this goes out, or if indeed it does, it may have passed.
Well, we're fine because we're in a soundproof, vacuum-sealed studio currently. So this is just about as safe or as dangerous as it gets, depending on how healthy both of us are.
And none of us have touched each other yet.
We haven't, no. We did the classic elbow greeting.
We did the elbow greeting.
You insisted on it. I thought it was just an actor thing. I had no idea it had anything to do with coronavirus.
To be honest, I have not been out for ages and I haven't touched anyone but myself for a long time. So I didn't really know the protocol. There's a lot of people's birthdays, though, I've noticed whilst out and about.
What does that possibly mean?
There's a lot of people singing happy birthday everywhere.
Oh, I did not get the joke at all. I thought you just meant walking along.
As a professional comedian,
for some reason,
you should have done.
But you said out and about, right? You're singing happy birthday when you're washing your hands in a toilet. I wouldn't consider that out and about. In my defence...
Well, if I was
I was
out
imagining
here,
you on the street.
Okay.
In my defence, but it was a good joke and I do apologise. I can't apologise enough. What I would say, though, is that despite all your...
I'll tell you what, though, it's such a good joke that you should use it on your tour.
And I will. I promise to use it on my tour because...
In Southend?
I'll have done Southend by the time this goes out.
Okay. Well, wherever else you're playing.
Sure. I'll use it.
Any the audience
ones,
will love it. They
any
will
of the ones that I know
it.
That you won't be at, I will definitely use that line. What I would say, though, from this last couple of minutes of conversation is that much as you'll use phrases like glacial... Glaciation, sorry. The pull quote from this podcast that people are going to remember is, I haven't touched anyone but myself for a long time. That is going to be your legacy on Early Work, I'm afraid.
All I'm doing there is I'm making a joke which I throw away. and now you're drawing attention to it.
That's my job.
By repeating, that's the job. By we're stealing other people's
I'm
material.
I'm afraid the job really of host
hammering it
is to underline sentences that my guests say. That's really all I do.
Well,
it's much easier being a host than a guest. You don't have to do anything.
I love doing podcasts and radio and things because you don't people don't look at you. I don't mind talking. I just don't like being looked at.
Right, you're an actor.
I know.
A very strange career choice.
In the old days, I didn't mind. Nowadays, I'd rather just sit behind a microphone.
Do you do voiceovers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, lovely.
So, you were good at geography at school.
Yeah.
I
was quite good at it, yeah, and I really enjoyed it. And I was one of the first students, pupils, to do the A-level linguistics course. I'm state educated, and so English language or linguistics wasn't a course you could do. It was always English literature, and I did English language. I did linguistics at A level, and I loved that. It was my favourite course I've ever done, and it was incredibly rewarding.
In English, I'm trying to remember English language.
Well, it's just linguistics, sort of grammar and stuff like that.
But
also, it's sort of how language and discourse is used in different environments, both in the workplace and in regular social life.
When you were doing linguistics,
yeah,
because it's the study of language, is there any room for creativity in that course?
I don't think it was ever like that, really. I think most of the creative writing, as I imagine nowadays, happens really when you're at primary school level. That's when you...
Is that what it was for you? You were most creative at primary school?
If we're talking about writing stories or writing in general, then yeah, definitely primary school was my apex.
It's a very strange feeling, isn't it, to peak at primary school?
It is, yeah.
It happens to the best of us.
It does, yeah. It does.
So by the time you got to secondary school and you were focused on football, human geography and drama, you weren't being particularly creative. In drama, were you getting to like write plays ever?
Yeah, I was doing that. I was writing stuff in drama and acting and singing and dancing and all that stuff that we do. But I was also on my way to being a professional footballer at the same time.
Oh, really? You were that good?
I had trials with Notts County. I was signed up for Notts County Juniors, and then I was part of their School of Excellence, which was a feeder school for Lillishaw, which was the England training school at the time. So I was sort of on that path, running concurrently with being a thesp. So it was a bit...
How did those two marry?
Not very well.
No. So are the football team
not very
mocking you for being a...
Yeah, I do remember being at some sort of event at Notts County at Meadow Lane with all the football lads aged, I don't know, maybe 13, 14, because I was under 11s to under 14. And there was music playing and we were all playing pool. And I think I sort of started dancing to the music, but in a quite a choreographed way. and we were obviously doing some sort of contemporary dance module in drama.
And then you, as soon as music hits, you can't resist.
I can't resist, you know, when, you know.
It's in your veins.
My mind was telling me, anyway. and I was wholly humiliated by these football lads.
In what sense?
They just laughed at me. And
did it go the other way? Did the drama people go, "Oh, you're going to kick a ball, are you?"
No, I don't remember it going the other way. Just because I just think arts people are just a bit nicer.
Yeah, football lads, more bullies.
Well, yeah, the bullies. Yeah,
more bullies.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
they're thugs.
The evidence, proof
you're
of the pudding.
You're a Tottenham fan, aren't you?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and can confirm, we're thugs.
Yeah,
we're all thugs. When you were doing plays in drama, so you were doing drama presumably the whole way through school.
Yeah.
Like in secondary school and primary school? Do they do that at primary school?
Yes. And in fact, the first time I realised I wanted to perform, I was doing a sketch at primary school, age 9, where it's really not funny now, but it was like a kind of slapstick thing. I was brought up on Laurel and Hardy and Buster Keaton, and I sort of did this silent slapstick thing where there was a man watching a football match. This is where the two things married, right. You see. Man was watching a football match and the doorbell kept going, and every time he'd leave the room, a goal would be scored and he'd miss the goal. And when he came back in, I'd do this kind of over-the-top reaction, annoyed reaction.
Sure.
And I remember, like, all the everybody laughing at these reactions, and it would happen. Like, I would sit down and watch the game, and then the doorbell would go, oh, dear, I'll get the door and come back in, and then, oh, they've scored, and everyone would laughing at me. And I thought, oh, okay, this is...
That's this great.
Is,
I mean,
this
I,
is something I want to do.
I can imagine a little kid, how old would you say?
No, I was nine then.
Nine-year-old kid doing that would be hilarious. Having the exacerbation of a old man, a middle-aged man, the doorbell ringing, it's relatable stuff.
Yeah.
We've all been in that situation before. We've gone to the toilet or something, and then you come back, the goal's been scored.
Some event has occurred, which,
exactly.
which you wish you'd seen.
So As long as the event hasn't occurred in the toilet, then I think we're safe. When you were doing that play as a nine-year-old,
yeah,
nine-year-old football fan, marrying your love of football with your love of drama, you were getting laughs.
Yeah.
That, the moment you decided, I want to get laughs all the time.
I think so, yeah.
And that was,
you must have had a similar point.
I think so, In an amateur dramatics group, I would always play things for laughs. Similar thing, where I was the youngest one in the group, and we did this, like, wedding. I remember there being this wedding scene, and they were like, go, you've got 10 minutes, invent this play. Mm. And it was a very female-heavy amateur dramatics group, as they often were. So they said, they put just, like, one boy per group to, very heteronormative, actually, at the time, so it could be a man and wife being married.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll point up heteronormative for you if you like. Well done.
Yeah.
Lovely word.
thank you. I just got based on the
very
diversity
big
chat.
Nowadays. Unheard of in the 90s.
Exactly. Like, no one knew what you were talking about. Yeah. So, but they insisted that it was like, it needs to be a man and wife getting married. And I was like, nah, it's not funny to play the groom. I'll play a dad who is furious his daughter is getting married.
Right.
And I will burst in. And it was the same thing, playing for laughs, the idea of like a 10-year-old playing an old dad.
Great.
Who's angry. It was exactly the same thing. And I remember getting laughs for it. And then at the end, the teacher going, yeah, I mean, I don't know why you're playing that part when I specifically put you in to be the groom, but yeah, pretty funny. It would have been the first time I was like, yep, I want to get some more laughs like that. Exactly, weirdly, that it's exactly the same character. Maybe that's a trope.
It's the same character. It is a trope. The same high stakes, angry male.
Oh, God. Yeah. Our acting debuts are so outdated. We're so antiquated in what we were making.
But yours is very, like, quite sexist, though, isn't it, as well? Like, it's sort of like dad polishing his shotgun. Ooh, my bloody...
Okay.
You know.
I'm willing to... refute that because...
How?
Because my play was woke because in it two women were being married.
No.
Sure, my character was furious about it. But I was the one who insisted this has to be a lesbian wedding.
Absolutely fine. Absolutely fine.
And that's before that was legal.
Then I retract. This was not a sexist character. It was merely homophobic.
Oh, no. What have I done? Well, thanks for coming on the first ever non-broadcast recording of this podcast. Really appreciate it. Can you remember any of the plays you did when you were a bit older, secondary school, when you were in drama?
Yeah, I had fantastic drama teachers, and one teacher, Kevin Troughton.
Did you full name the teachers? Or you just know as an adult?
Of course he did, because it was drama.
Oh, it's Sue and Kevin. Kev. Call me Kevin.
It was Kev. It was Sue and Kev. Come on.
Okay, before you go into this story, now that I know he's Kevin Troughton, he'd call me Kev. I need you to describe the sort of clothes he would wear to school.
Well, it was tie-dye in those days. Tie-dye.
He got away with tie-dye at
spiky
school.
Hair, a bit like the late Gary Rhodes.
What a
spectacles,
reference.
Not trendy ones. The kind of ones that, you know, the ones, I don't know whether it's short or long-sighted, that makes your eyes look massive.
Yeah, right.
The one that long-sighted, isn't
with
it?
This with spiky hair and tie-dye?
Spiky hair and tie-dye and, like, beads. I mean, he now works in Africa.
Right. Okay.
And
teaching drama?
Yeah. With hindsight, you could have seen it coming. Just because of the whole look, you know.
It actually sounds like he's got his clothes from rummaging through the drama box of all the different costume options.
Tie-dye
shirt, beads, mad glasses, spike my hair up.
Like a 90s jester.
Right.
If jesters were around in the 90s...
They would have looked like this.
They would look like that.
How was he... And you said he was a great teacher.
Very good. And he wrote a play called We'll Meet Again, based around the song We'll Meet Again, which was set in the Second World War, in which I played three characters. That's the only thing that I've done in my career, if you'd like to call it that, that my father references, is that school play.
Really?
Mm.
So he came to see that school play. Has he not been to see anything since?
He's seen everything I've done.
But he always talks about...
He always talks about we'll meet again.
Were you particularly good in that play?
Had I have known that this podcast was so retrospective and would warrant me or need me to plunder my memory, I wouldn't have done it because I don't really have many memories pre-15. So sure. I have actually no idea...
If you were good or not.
If I was good or not.
But you played three parts, so you must have stood out.
I mean, there must have been some ability to play three different parts at that age, yeah. But I don't really remember. You'd have to ask my dad.
Did you get to write any plays in secondary school? So Kevin is writing them and casting them.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Did he ever go, right, off you go?
Yeah, we had to write our own stuff and choreograph our own stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I was always writing stuff, but I don't remember writing any full-length plays, no. But there were little monologues and things that I wrote, yeah.
Are any of those the sort of things you brought today? It looks like, from what I can see in front of you, a bit younger. So this would be you plunging what you described as your creative apex, primary school. Please tell me this is primary school.
No, I wrote this when I was 27.
We're looking at a pretty early drawing. I'll post a picture of that on the internet. It's basically a very primary school painting? No, coloured in. Picture of you.
Felt tip pens.
Is that you on the front?
I imagine so.
It's a very pink man wearing a brown jacket, red trousers and holding a flag that says poetry on it.
Yeah.
And there's a tree behind you that's tiny. What's that, bricks? Are you in front of a brick, multicoloured brick wall,
very, very, very nice. Cosmopolitan.
And is this the front cover to a folder?
Yes, entitled Poetry.
Entitled Poetry.
And it contains poetry and writings from, well, one here from the 21st of July, I'm assuming in and around 1987, 88.
Right, okay. But it's not, you didn't go as far as the year?
No, I didn't go as far as the year. I didn't realise quite how much I'd need it now.
Yeah. Well, you should have predicted early work, mate. Yes. You should have known that eventually a genius format is going to land in Radio X's lap. And Matthew Horne is going to be contacted. At least we know. That's the interesting thing about writing dates on things. Right, I found this with guests. Quite often people have written the date, but they don't have the year. Think, what did you think as a kid you needed it for? You think they're just like, at least I'll know in 20 years that it was in summer. Why would it be relevant?
I know, that's an interesting thought. But at the same time, I think it should be the responsibility. If you're saying that we should have put... If you're saying it's like one or the other... I mean, this is a polarized
either the whole date or
either
no
the
date.
Whole date or no date. Then that is the responsibility of the teacher, surely.
Sure. I'm willing to accept that.
So let's now spend a few minutes dismantling the education system.
Well, Kevin was dressed inappropriately for a start. We shouldn't have been calling him Kevin.
Not one, but two earrings.
Oh, wow. Different ears, presumably.
Yep.
What kind of earrings are we talking? Because if we're going down, he's rummaging through the drama costume box, I'm thinking hoop.
Yeah, a little hoop, yeah.
Little hoops
on either.
Oh, my God. This guy really just came to school wearing nothing and went, oh, fuck it. I'll just dip in there.
Yeah, but I really respected him. I loved it. Because we had a big, high-tech drama room.
What do you mean?
Well, it was
the black box room.
Yeah, but it was big.
Right.
It was big. It was serious.
Did it have, like, like lights?
It had a lighting rig, at least two overhead projectors.
So go on then, what have you got? What's your early work that you've
well,
got?
Well,
we know it's your poetry folder.
It's my poetry folder.
And we know it was in the summer. We know it was 21st of July, one of them.
Yeah, one of them was, yeah. So, here we go, look. Oh, dear. Right. Now, this is very woke, because there's a lady footballer. This is called Unfair, from the 21st of July.
Oh, my God, wow. Okay.
Circa 87.
I like where this is going.
Yeah. When we went over to the park Sunday mornings to play football, we picked up sides. Lizzie was our striker, because she had the best shot. When the teachers chose the school team, Marshy was our striker. Now, I know that is Louise Marsh. Lizzie wasn't allowed to play, they said, so she watched us lose. Score 4-3. I mean, it doesn't rhyme particularly.
No, I don't know if it belongs necessarily in the poetry folder. It's just an autobiographical anecdote about injustice. I've got to chat to you about that.
Why?
A bit. I need to delve deeper.
I'll tell you what, this has actually been marked by a teacher, and the comment at the bottom with a tick is, good lad.
Ah, oh, perfect.
The very base you want to achieve is good lad.
That's what we're all really secretly aiming for every bit of work we do. If you could leave this podcast a review and you just said good lad.
Good lad.
I'd be pretty happy, as long as it's 5 stars, obviously. I'm not fucking about with 4 stars, mate.
No.
Now, that was called Unfair.
Yep.
That was about a girl being the best footballer but not being picked to play football, to be the striker.
Yeah. And then she watched us lose.
And she watched you lose. Did this happen? Is this 100% true? There's no poetic license with this poem?
I've absolutely no idea. I told you. I don't have any memories.
Of course.
Sorry. Can I read one called Pies?
Absolutely, you can.
This is called Pies. It's from the 25th of June, so it's early summer, late spring. I take my pie from the oven. Twisting steam comes from the middle. It's all crispy and it smells delicious. Gooseberries spill out of it in the crust. I can smell the apples in the steam. The scent is flying through the air. The guests are waiting. Now it is cut in a moment and it is demolished.
Well, what? That's pretty good use of language for how old you were.
Demolished, that's quite a good end.
It is demolished, about a pie. Twisting steam.
Twisting steam, very evocative.
I can't really ask you any questions because you don't have any memories. Do you like pie?
No, I didn't eat many when I was younger, but I think this is because Notts County are called the Magpies, and then it's shortened even further to the Pies.
Oh, right, and you decided to write a poem called Pies, but not
pies,
about Notts
but not about Magpies.
Or football, about
but Nottingham,
pies.
You know, it's
little quite... illustrations on there?
Oh, yeah, there's illustrations, yeah, all over the shop.
Oh.
This one's called Hair from the 30th of June, so this is a week later, if you can imagine the output, the prolific output.
He's not stopping,
is he? This young mind. I saw a lady with red hair talking to one with blue. The sun shone, the rain rained, the streets emptied, the people had gone. When I looked for the ladies again, there was a purple stream flowing down the drain. Good lad.
Wow, that poem...
That loses its way, doesn't it?
I don't agree. I think it's got the ending. Okay, I think we can analyse that poem.
Oh, actually, I know what it...
That's metaphorical entirely. At the end, they both wash it out of their hair, together.
I don't know whether you're more brilliant than I am.
Red and purple. Red and blue, sorry. And a purple stream going down the drain.
Good lad.
Good lad. I mean, a teacher's got to do more than that, because I'm going to do the teacher's job for them now. Right.
Right, I want to read one more...
Not yet. Red and blue. We're talking about this hair poem.
It's very good, actually.
Right.
Now you've pointed it up.
Let's think about it. Give yourself more credit. Red and blue. There's a woman with red hair, a woman with blue hair. Right. Immediately, we're supposed to assume these are rivals.
Yep.
Red versus blue. It's a classic. You're a football lad as a kid. It's a classic, red versus blue. Rival
women. Alpha women.
And they're against each other. All the people leave the street.
Yeah.
So, because they know shit's about to kick off.
Ah.
Showdown
you
time.
You think they've left the street because it's raining. No. It's because stuff's going to kick off.
It's going to kick off.
Yeah.
It's time for a showdown. In the end, they decide, bury the hatchet. Let's just rinse out our hair. Fuck the rain. It's got nothing to do with the rain. We'll go home together. We'll rinse out our hair. And down the same stream, we will create purple. We all know purple is the best colour. You have chosen a colour that rhymes with nothing to end your poem. And I appreciate it.
I love that. I love your assessment. But
you think
there's a drawing of a man with purple trousers next to a drain. So,
oh, so it also stained a man's trousers. Ah, I see. No, hang on. No, that represents that your actions affect others. Okay, so warfare. The only victims of warfare are not the people partaking in it. It goes all the way to other people's trousers. It's metaphors. You've got to understand, you would have known of this. You've got no memory of this, so you can't possibly say.
Only you can say.
Only I can be the authority on this. Come on, what else you got?
What I want to read now is not a poem. And before, I'm going to caveat this by saying that it has been marked again, although he has spelt my name wrong, this teacher. And he said, some goodies here.
Some goodies.
Which is not as good as good lad, but...
What is this? What is it going to be?
It's called Mad Meals, and it's a 17-point list which of mad meals. and when I was reading it earlier, I didn't prep very much for this. I did do a spin class this morning. That's the only prep I did for this podcast.
Sure. Get the blood pumping, that's what you need for this.
Well, yeah, but my back's hurting. It reminds me, have you ever seen Robert Popper's shopping lists?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
And you were doing this at age 9.
Yes, Robert.
Popper, mate, up your game.
Yeah, up your game, mate. Grilled cork.
A good start.
Matchbox on toast. Glass soup. Roasted clock. Ping pong and chips. Fillet of calculator. Trouser salad. Grilled lamppost. Ice cream vanilla soap. Bat's wings ice cream. Snail body ice cream. Fish's tail ice cream. Smelly socks soup. Parrot beak salad. Roasted tree trunk. Grilled beaks. Fried flowers.
Amazing.
I think that's quite good.
That's genuinely
good.
We're
talking to Peter Serafanovich, which is a bit like Brian Butterfield,
yeah,
isn't it?
I thought that when
Real
you started
court,
saying
butter,
it.
Toast,
when you soup. When you started doing that, there are comedians whose whole show is that, who would be very successful. If you take that to the Edinburgh Fringe now, I'd tell you, you get a lot of 4-star reviews. You do all right, especially with the broadsheets.
Maybe I should come and support you in one. Like on one of your dates.
You're welcome to, but there's no projector and no fee. So up to you. A couple of things to say about that. Snail body. Very satisfying thing to hear. You're just basically going, I'm not having shell in this. Snail body only.
Grilled beef. Why not slug, though?
Good point.
See, there's obviously a reason. I obviously wanted a homeless slug.
Yeah, but it actually has to be. So it's basically, it's not just a slug.
No.
It needs to experience trauma. Snail needs to have been through
it needs
something.
To have suffered.
Also, maybe you just had comedic instinct to know snail body is funnier than slug. Snail body. That's a funny phrase.
Yeah, you see, bat's wings ice cream and fish's tail. Three flavours of ice cream, there's got to be some trauma that the animal
has gone through. It does go deeper, yeah.
So it is pretty...
I did like how you... It was all really inventive. And then you momentarily lose inspiration and just make everything ice cream for about three.
I was obviously hungry for ice cream.
You wrote ice cream and then thought, God, I love ice cream. And they just kept writing about ice cream. It's such a 9-year-old's approach to it.
Fillet of calculator?
Yeah.
That's straight out of the Robert Popper book, isn't it?
Yeah. What would have been influencing you at the time to come up with that sort of stuff?
Not Robert Popper. I don't know. I tell you what it was. Spike Milligan.
Yeah.
Because he wrote
absolutely.
A lot of children's poems and they were quite wacky.
Yeah.
And out there. And
huge fan of Spike Milligan.
Surreal.
Now you've said it. I can't believe
quite
I
surreal.
Didn't see that.
I think Unspun Socks from a Chicken's Laundry. It's a book he wrote and they're poems and I think I was influenced by that.
Yeah. It's really Spike Milligan say it. Yeah. Have you got any more you want to do before we get to the epic later?
I'm a magical mouse. I don't eat cheese. I eat sunsets and tops of trees. I don't wear fur. I wear funnels of lost ships and the weather that's under dead leaves in the magical mouse. I don't fear cats or wood owls. I do as I please always. I don't eat crust. That's the magical mouse. It's June 15th. What a prolific month.
I mean, that month is absolutely insane. What year was it? You don't know.
We don't know.
We'll never know.
It would have been circa... 87, 88. It's certainly pre-Stone Roses.
If this was a World Cup year, then you are the most prolific man I've ever heard of in my life. You'd have been watching the World Cup, writing this inventive Spike Milligan poetry. It's fucking hell, for a 9-year-old, it's so surreal. Oh, great. Right, I've got to judge you now. Not that I haven't been already, but I've got to rate you on 3 categories. That's the format of the show.
Well, you didn't tell me that in the preamble.
Don't worry.
You didn't mention the judgment.
Oh, you've got to expect judgment. With anything you do. Is this why you've been self-isolating so much?
Yes.
Right.
You'll learn. What are you, 28? You'll learn. As you get older, you get more inhibited as a human being.
Well, in the meantime, I've got Ray. You on 3 categories.
In the meantime, strap in, you prick, and listen to this.
The categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club / Ryan Gosling Ryan Goose score. And that means... how much potential does it show for who you've gone on to become? Okay.
Right.
So, originality, it's out of 5 each one.
Okay.
Originality, 5 out of 5. Straight 5 out of 5. I know you said you're influenced by Spike Milligan, but for a 9-year-old, I've never seen anything like it. A fillet of calculator, stuff like that.
That is good, actually.
That is so original for a 9-year-old.
5 out of 5
for originality.
I'm genuinely thrilled. Right. I didn't realise I'd be this thrilled.
Yeah, it's because you kicked up such a fuss about being judged. Right, pure teen horniness, I've got to go with 0.
Yeah, I know.
No one's going to be insulted by that, but you're not a teenager and it's the least horny stuff I've ever heard in my life. Although you say snail's body, actually. You do specify the snail's body. It does. You could interpret it in a certain way, but as you say, it was actually more about the suffering than anything else. Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score.
What does that mean?
How much does it represent you now? Like, can I see the future you in this work? It's hard to say. I mean, it's hard to say. Do you consider yourself writing those sorts of things now?
There are something, I mean, not necessarily the stuff I've read out, but in the rest of the file, which will be available online shortly after this podcast is released through Faber and Faber, I can definitely tell it was written by me, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading bits of it and I thought, oh, that sounds like me. But then, you know, that's me judging myself.
Just trying to think if you've got any titles of things that are similar to grilled beaks.
No. I mean, if it was Robert Popper or Peter Serafinowicz sat here, then you'd say it'd be 5 out of 5, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
But it's not.
But it isn't, no. They're not available.
No.
So I'll go for a 3.
Okay, that's I'm very happy with the
I've
five
got to say,
five
it's based
three.
Only, that's based entirely on you telling me that it's, you can see yourself in it. Right, now, I gave you some judgment, but I now level the playing field by reading you some of my early work, which you then judge on the same categories. That's how I square this circle to make it even. Now, embarrassingly, your early work is much younger than mine, so you can actually back yourself up a little bit. Yeah. I was 17 when I wrote this. So this is classic 17-year-old deep poetry, all right? You ready? Okay.
Yep.
I'm losing the will to continue. I'm losing the will to forever just chase this disgrace, this misplaced romantic distaste, this time waste. I'm losing the will to continue. I'm losing the will to act different and new when all through it's not true, and I do what I do when I don't. I'm losing the will to continue. I'm losing the will to be endlessly lost, self-embossed, overglossed, irrepressibly tossed to one side, which I'm not a part of. The will to continue is not to be found. I surround my profound motives, sound an alarm as I'm drowned in emotion around. I'm continuing unwillingly, unfulfillingly distilling thee as killing me, but filling me with reason to ignore this deep feeling and relax with the season. So we all should repress and digress to the best time we'll ever see. Just sitting and chatting and resting what morals might be. Tonight, good times, just morals and me, just issues and we. Just worries and money, just fun in the city. Tonight, let's be free.
It's somewhere between Stormzy and a Hovis commercial.
That's very much my brand, actually. At the time, British advertising was not entirely made up of poetry.
It wasn't all poetry,
yeah.
Okay, so you were ahead of your time.
Absolutely, just like you.
Pre-poetry. Yeah, I mean, are you being hired? Because I could have been listening to... I could be signing up to Nationwide as soon as I leave this booth. I mean, it's very poetic and lyrically it's very interesting. It's a little earnest and overwrought, but...
Oh, absolutely.
But
I just think if you're saying something as vague as just fun in the city, then you really haven't thought... Mm. You've got to be specific in art, and that is...
It's very lyrical and of its time. It's a little loquacious, but I like it.
Yeah,
it's not very horny.
No.
Well, look. I don't. It does sound like the words of a wanker. So perhaps it is a little bit.
To back up the horniness, it does begin with, I think, the premise of it at the start. I'm losing the will to continue with this misplaced romantic distaste.
Yeah.
I mean, that's clearly just a rhyme. I think it's me saying I'm losing the will to keep chasing this girl who doesn't like me.
Okay, so really horrid. So,
and then fun in the city. But, yeah, what do you want to go? Originality is the first one out of 5.
Okay, so at the time or now?
Up to you.
Okay, not at the time. So we were talking 11 years ago.
Yes.
So is that before the first Streets album? No.
No.
Then 2.
Oh, I mean, a lot of the poetry I've read on this podcast is extremely post-Streets. post Streets, post. It's very post. Post Arctic Mike Skinner. Monkeys first
okay.
album.
Oh, okay.
Very post Kate Nash. Very post Lily Allen. Like all
okay,
of that sort of.
Fine.
Like,
then I'm going to have to go 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5 for originality. Okay, fine. I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take it. The next one, Pure Teen Horniness.
We've already five discussed. Out of 5. 5 out of 5. Yeah, I'm going 5 out.
For 2 reasons, written by a wanker and
purely reasons of onanism.
And Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose. Does it represent the me I am today? Now, what I will tell you, right, before you answer this...
Is you an absolute wanker?
If you haven't gleaned so far, I'm the hugest prick in England. No, I'm currently the tour show I'm currently doing does involve me parodying a Nationwide advert poem.
Wow.
And okay. that is me trying to get some sort of self-retribution, I think. It's me trying to go own my own past a little bit.
Oh, well, then 5 out of 5. I've got to give you 5 out of 5 for that. If you're parodying that in a self-effacing way, then that is...
See, in my head, I was just parodying the Nationwide advert, but now you've said that, I've realised I'm parodying me at 17.
Yourself, which is a fantastic... You know, we can only survive if we laugh at ourselves.
Sure.
And I think if anything, we can take that from this podcast.
Parodying your own work does also...
If nobody else
I'm a wanker.
Will,
yeah,
we
yeah,
should
yeah.
laugh at ourselves.
Yeah. So, 5-5-1, I get 11 out of 15.
Yeah.
That plays against your 8 out of 15. So, I am the winner of the podcast. However, the message of the podcast is we are both losers. Every time. That's the message. Now, if you would like to, I would love you to play us out with your epic poem, I believe, that will put some, we'll put some production under it, we'll put some music under it. If it's got to be epic, it's going to be epic. Is there a title for this poem?
Yeah, I've just got to find it. I think it's called Dead Bird. No, it was me behind the bin, wasn't it? Sorry, there's so much material here. Stretching right back into autumn. okay, down behind the dustbin... Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Ted. Leave me alone, he says, I'm just going to bed. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Felicity. It's a bit dark, he, she said. They cut off the electricity.
Oh.
Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Roger. Do you own this bin, I said. No, I'm only the lodger. Ian said, down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Sue. What are you doing here? I said, I've got nothing else to do. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Anne. I'm just off now, she said, to see a dog about a man.
Oh,
that's good. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Jack. Are you going anywhere? I said, no, I'm just coming back. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Billy. I'm not talking to you, I said, if you're going to be silly. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Harry. I tried to take the bin away, but it was too heavy to carry. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Mary. I wish I wasn't a dog, she said. I wish I was a canary. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Joe. Leave me alone, she said. I've hurt my little toe. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Rose. Leave me alone, she said. I've got a badger up my nose. Down behind the dustbin, I met a dog called Claire. They've shut the lid. And I'm running out of air.
Is that how it ends?
That's pretty bleak, isn't it?
Oh, out of nowhere.
So
all along that was dark. Fuck me. That is dark. Wow, you had it in you all along. I can't believe
that's
it.
Just, yeah.
That's genuinely stunned.
I mean, that is just a cut too of like a dustbin.
Just zooming out, drone shot.
But you know inside there are dead dogs.
And they're called things like Felicity. When you first said Felicity, I thought, fucking hell,
how's
bold choice.
How's you going to do
electricity.
This?
Electricity. Early on as well, because later on you did Anne. I was like, you get through all the one-syllable ones before you get to Felicity. Roger and Lodger, lovely to hear. But the main takeaway from that is, I've got to see a dog about a man.
I know.
That's pretty clever stuff for someone. When was this again? This was in...
This would have been in...
Well, let's just have the month, please.
2017. This would have been... this is May.
This is May. So this is before the other ones.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, he's opening with this.
I mean, apart from see a dog about a man, which is obviously brilliant, there's actually an illustration that I've done of me hugging a dustbin.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just... it's so sad.
If I want anybody who's listening today, if I want either of you listening today to take anything away, and that would be me hugging a dustbin.
Very much a metaphor for what this podcast has been. That's what happens when you're in self-isolation. Matthew Hall, thank you so much for coming
thank
on the
you.
Podcast. There we go. That was Matthew Horn with some early work that took some very interesting twists and turns, some of them darker than others. Good God, the end of that last poem was absolutely insane. I did not see that coming, but that happened a few times. That Robert Popper, Peter Serafinovich-esque writing about all the different foods is absolutely mental for a nine-year-old to do. I couldn't believe it. As ever, my early work, that was one of the most embarrassing. I've been saving that one that I read for ages, thinking, oh God, every time I read it in my documents, I'm like, I can't read that on early work, that's so embarrassing. But we've now got to the stage of early work where I've run out of ones that I'm fine with sharing, and we're on to the ones I'm very ashamed of. So it can only get worse from here. Oh, good. As ever, I am on tour. As I announced before, make sure to go and check that out. I've extended it into the autumn. There's loads more dates in much bigger rooms that are too big, so please come along. Tickets are on my website, reesejames.co.uk. Matthew Horn is on Twitter. Go and follow him. I think it's at MF Horn. And as ever, subscribe to the podcast. Leave it a review if you enjoyed it. And we will see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.